I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
It would appear that I'm doing a lot of these pre-reel messages lately. Well, in this, my defense, we ended on a really good joke on the podcast, so I didn't want to go back and like plug what we had to plug. So I figured, whatever, we'll just do it in the beginning. So what I want to tell you guys what we're going to be doing is that Miami Heat beat Mailbag live on Twitch next week. Look, we're looking at Wednesday-ish. We'll kind of give you updated as you get closer to the day so we can get as many people on as we can. But send us questions on Twitter with the hashtag MHBMail and ask us any question you want. Any question about the Heat, any question about us, we're going to have fun with it. And we're going to answer them live on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/MIA Heat Beat. So check that out. Also join our Discord server. We're going to put a link for that in the podcast description. And it's also on our Twitch page. You can click one of the buttons and it'll take you right to Discord. We're having lots of fun in there. We were shooting the shit, talking trades and everything. So make sure to get in that. Make sure to send us a question at hashtag MHBMail. And we're going to answer them live on stream next week. So we're going to keep plugging that. We're going to keep going. Also, I didn't mention this on the podcast, but I wrote an article on heatbeatmiami.com, kind of outlining the Heat's free agency and all that. We talk about a lot of it on the show anyway. But if you want a kind of more detailed version to be read with all the numbers and everything handy, you could check that out on our website at MiamiHeatBeat.com or HeatBeatMiami.com. So please enjoy the podcast.
It feels like Miami. Miami, 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 Miami.
Welcome to the Heat Beat Podcast. I'm your host, Giancarlo Navas. And with me today is not producer and co-founder Brian Goins. I actually thought he was going to be on. Maybe we should have waited for him. Maybe he'll show up later. Who cares? He's not here right now. Instead, we have our 2K coach, Frankie.
What it is.
We also have our statistician and pun master. Also, you can find his work on Basketball News. Nikias Duncan.
Hello, hello.
Gentlemen, are we ready to talk NBA free agency, specifically Miami Heat free agency?
No,
well, we do.
No, we're not. You're supposed to say yes. You're supposed to let it go so we get we have fun with this. So the way we're going to do this pod, we're going to do two this week. We're going to do today on free agency targets. And then on Thursday, we're having a guest on. It's a surprise. I think you guys will like him to talk trade targets, right? So it's going to be kind of a best of both worlds. So we're not really going to get into too many trades today, although if it comes up, we'll see where it heads us. We also want to give thanks to our family at the Blue Wire Podcast Network. They are awesome. They are incredible. Check out everybody that's doing work on Blue Wire, especially if you're into the draft stuff. I mean, I know that our friends at Light Years are doing good stuff. Chase on all the NBA shows at Lakers Film Room. So much good content being produced at Blue Wire right now. We love to see it. All right, y'all. So the important thing today that I want to get to, let's start with the Heat's own guys, right? So let's review the Heat's cap situation, because I think understanding this going in will kind of inform the rest of everything that we're going to talk about. So the Heat are going to have about $22 million in cap space. I mean, with all the cap projections that we have going on, I mean, we don't really know, and teams are complaining to the league that they have no clarity on the cap. But I mean, we're roughly estimating about a $22 million cap space for Miami, and that is if they guarantee Duncan Robinson and Kendrick's Nunn deal, if Kelly Olynyk opts in, and if Miami keeps their draft pick, right? So that's kind of accounting for all that salary, and then that'll account to $22 million in cap space. The Heat have the cap hold on Jay Crowder is not really important right now. What is important is Goran Dragic's $28 million cap hold. It's enormous, and what a cap hold essentially is, it's a hold on the cap that unless you deal with that particular player's free agency, that cap hold does not remove. So that's not really cap space that they have. So because Gorin's cap hold is $28 million, it's over the Heat's $22 million in available cap space. So we have to take all that into perspective before we kind of get into how the Heat are going to approach their offseason, because that is a big, important limiting factor in what they can do. The Heat are going to have access to their full mid-level exception, which this year is going to be about $9.3 million, and their biannual exception, which is $3.6 million, if they act as over a cap team, which we're assuming and judging by all the reports that they are. The Heat also have a $7.5 million trade exception, which is not really important to this show, but I mean, if it just comes up later, I just want you guys to know that, you know, they can make salary happen. They can add up salary to make it happen. And Iguodala has a $15 million expiring deal with a team option in 2021. So that's also important in case we do get into some trades. So Nikias, I kind of want to start with Goran. I think the consensus is they're going to give him a 1 year, 20-ish million dollar contract, and bring him back next year.
Well, I would say, like, I think the safe money is on Goran being back on a 1 year deal, like you stated. I've been kind of on the other side of that for the last couple of years. I am still worried about the defensive limitations. I think with Bam having more of an on-ball role, with Jimmy basically being at his best offensively when he's running point, with Tyler Hero kind of taking a step up in the bubble and during the postseason. If you believe in Kendrick Nunn at all, which it's easy not to believe in him, but you have to think of what the organization is looking at. If they do believe in Nunn, that's four ball handlers already. And that combined with Goran's age, with the defensive limitations, with him coming off the foot injury, I would be a little iffy on bringing him back. I would rather use that money to go for a wing or at least a young guard. I just wrote a Heat preview a few days ago. See if they want to utilize the cap space, if they want to renounce some cap holds, throw an offer out at D'Anthony Melton. I think that would be a nice target for them that wouldn't eliminate the max slot for next summer, depending on what the cap does, but also gives them another young guy in the pipeline. I think that would be something to look into. But if you're asking me what I think will happen, I think it's going to be a one-year deal for Goran, and then they give him something smaller in 2021.
I think that's interesting how you just totally think that they can make this work without Goran, because I think we saw how it looked in the finals without him, and Nunn just doesn't have that kind of playmaking ability and pick and roll in particular. Goran is another guy to get to the free throw line, which they just don't really have a lot of guys other than Jimmy. I know that they did like from an off the dribble perspective. It just, to me, it seems like if they lose Goran, like, I don't know how they replace that kind of production, especially come in the playoffs. Like, I don't think Kendrick Nunn is that guy. As much as you can like him, I don't think he's going to be as ready. I mean, Goran was their leading scorer in the playoffs. Like, that dude, you know, when times got tough in quarters and when offense went dry, I mean, that's a guy that could get you a basket in high pick and roll. Is a really, really good pick and roll partner with Bam, probably the best on the team. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I'm actually surprised how willing you are to move off of him, even if it's just for a 1 year.
Okay. I was saying he obviously looked bad in the bubble. He was dealing with some injuries, dealing with just the general rookie wall. A lot of other stuff apparently was going on that kind of affected him. I do think removed from that environment and just giving him a little bit of time to kind of gather his head, I think he's going to bounce back to the regular season form. I think that definitely helps, at least during the regular season. Again, what we saw for Tyler Hero, I think he's ready for more on-ball responsibility. Jimmy's going to handle a lot of the ball handling responsibility. I think there's more of a leap from Bam. And then on top of that, the Heat do have the 20th pick in the draft this year. There are a lot of talented young guards that are going to be available in the back end of the first round that I think the Heat can target. So I think collectively there's a way to replace the production that Goran Dragic brings if the Heat want to go that route.
So, and Frankie, I want to bring you in on this. Like, I'm of the opinion that the Heat really, you know, their window is all of a sudden a lot quicker than it was before. Like, they're clearly ready for contention now. They're not just kind of waiting around for 2021. And while, like, I think Nikias is probably right in the macro that eventually those guys can replace the Dragic production. I mean, they gotta try to win next year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's
I think Nikias is, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Nikias, but I think what you're trying to do is you're trying to get ahead of it before the drop happens.
Yes.
Yeah, that's. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Gorn was obviously fantastic during the postseason. That is also the best that Gorn has played in 2 years, 2.5 years.
Yeah, I would agree.
But also, like, he had a legitimate role guy because Hassan, I mean, we always complained about the screen setting and the role guy, and he had a bunch of space. Like, I think that that's also part of why he's looked the best he's looked.
Yeah, that's like, fair. But he's also 35 and he's coming off that's a big injury. So
I think it's totally fine to project that. But I mean, like, I think for next year specifically, especially if you're just looking at a 1 year deal, I just don't think that they're going to be a better team without him.
I mean, it depends because, you know, like, you don't know how this injury is going to affect. But I really don't know the extent.
I mean, everybody seems to say that he'll come back fine. Like, I haven't read one person like that thinks that this is gonna be like disastrous for him.
But like, how many guys? I don't know the history of this. Like, the only guy I know that had like the only guy like in recent memory that had plantar fasciitis issues off the top of my head is Joakim Noah. And
no, but this is not plantar. Like, this is the plantar fascia popped.
Yeah, but
so like that's gonna recover, right? So that part, from what I understand, hashtag he beat MD, that part's gonna be fine. Like, I from everything I understand, that's gonna make a full recovery.
No, you hope so. But it's also like, it's full recovery to, there's a big difference between full recovery to being able to play and full recovery to being what you were before.
I guess that I didn't see too many people too concerned about it. I mean, I guess you're very right in thinking that. But, I mean, that's also why you signed the 1 year. You know what I mean? Because, like, I don't know. Like,
but I'm with Nikias that I think it's going to happen. Like, I don't think they're not going to bring him back. Whether they should, it's you know, you can make a debate on either case. I think, you know, at the right money, 1 year deal, you take that gamble. But it's got to be at the right money. You know, if you're giving him closer to the 28, then that's a lot riskier than if you're getting him to agree on something worth 20 million. Where I think he helps the Heat is that he's shown in the past that he'll take less money to help the team, to help when he was up as a free agent in 2015, I believe it was. He took less money for them to keep Dwayne. And Dwayne had already earned a lot of money. It was like his last deal coming up, and Goran had never been paid, and Goran still took less money. So I think what Pat and the front office has shown before is that they'll give the guy a check, like a sheet of paper, say, hey, look, this is what it's going to look like. If you get this money, this is who we can go after. And this is what it's going to be if we can't get those guys.
My thing is, because Nikias had mentioned it like a little bit, like, you know, you renounce Goran, you get that cap hold off. And then you're also going to renounce Jay, because Jay has an $11 million cap hold, right? So that $22 million, all of a sudden, you only have $8 million of like legitimate cap space. And the mid-level is $9.3 million. So you're only at a real difference of $2 million to play with. So I don't really see how much of a better option there is than to just bring him back and then bring Jay Crowder back. And then at that point, you just operate as a cap team with your two exceptions, because in reality, their cap space is kind of fake unless they renounce both Goran and Jay Crowder. And at that point, I just don't think you're going to be able to replace those two guys with this $22 million in your exceptions. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair. The sum of bringing those two back and adding somebody with a mid-level biennial is probably better than anything you're going to get without it.
It's specifically because we're looking at like the 1 year.
Yeah. And we're also not counting Tyler and Bam growing and getting better.
That's true.
We haven't talked about that. We saw Tyler and Bam take leaps in the playoffs. Bam got hurt, obviously, and then Tyler got exposed a little bit in the finals, but you know, they're both really young, really talented, really smart, really are working. They can definitely take another leap next year.
I mean, they're gonna grow, Nikias, but like the leap to like legitimate, you know, number one offensive playmaker like Goran was at times, I think it's a bit much to ask out of two guys, especially somebody as flawed as Nunn. So I guess that's kind of where I meet you halfway.
I think those are fair points. I think just in general, I'm more worried about bringing back Goran from a defensive perspective than the offensive perspective. Because on offensively, I agree. Like what Goran brings in pick and roll, the chemistry that he has in BAM, like he's still very good. And even if he's like 4 or 5% worse, he's still going to be a very good offensive guard. So I get it from that perspective. I guess I just trust, as bad as Nunn is defensively, I probably trust him a little bit more to get a little bit better and be below average than I do for Goran to come back after the foot injury and with another year on him.
That's fair.
Be what he's been. Because again, like we're going back 2 years, that was the first time Spo had really made a conscious effort to hire Goran. And, you know, 2 years later, now he's basically on the edge of the zone. He's being hit in every possession. He's coming off the bench now. So I just think at a certain point, if you can get 80 to 85% of what Goran brings offensively between Nunn handling and Hero handling, and if you bring in a guard, a Tyrell Terry, a Tyrese Maxey or whatever, if you can get comparable production there and then improve defensively, I think that gives Miami a little bit more flexibility on the defensive end of the floor. And that kind of sets them up a little bit better short-term and long-term.
We'll talk about this a little bit later when we get into kind of the wings that they have available. But like some of these guys, I just, you know, like you mentioned Melton and some of those other guys, like I don't trust them to be on the floor late game in an elimination game. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that that's also something that, you know, when you're a team that's up to the point that Miami is, you got to look at, well, what guys are going to be regular season guys? Because I also think that's important too, especially if they're going to have a regular like playoffs next year with road games. I do think the regular season does matter in a guy, and getting some defensive help in the point guard position, you know, it's going to help in the grind of the regular season when you're playing a lot of really fast, annoying guards. They can't just play that super aggressive, heavy switch defense that's frankly looks exhausting. You know what I mean? Right. So I think for the regular season, you look at stuff like that, but I think in the playoffs, I think what this team is going to look at is, you know, can we play this guy late in games? Can we buy some minutes? Or is our offense just going to go to shit because this guy can't shoot, this guy can't handle, this guy can't do. So I, when I look at their options, that's the other part of that I can't, you know, we've seen at least Goran can survive. And, you know, Kemba Walker was a guy that we were all really scared of, and they just, the Heat game plan of everything that they switch and all the stuff that they do, it's just enough. And I don't really see that there's anybody at the market to help them, at least in free agency, not trade market, but that's kind of where I stand on the point guards.
100%. I think, I also think we're not talking about Gianni being afraid of Fred VanVleet joining the Heat instead of and leaving the Raptors.
Well, that's I didn't even mention. So if we want to get into the Raptors, if we want to get into that, like, you know, a guy like Fred and a guy like Ibaka, I've seen a lot of people link the Heat to Ibaka, and I'm just like, I don't understand why he would take the MLA, the mid-level here for reduced role when he can go somewhere else for mid-level and have a much greater role and probably have just as good as odds to win the championship. Like, I've seen a lot of people throw that way, unless Ibaka really wants to live in Miami. I've seen too many Raptor people and too many smart reporters just say Toronto's going to do what Miami's going to do with Dragic, just offer him the $20 million 1 year, and then he'll kind of reevaluate in 2021. Like, I think he absolutely makes them better. Like, you add a guy like Kemba who could shoot at the four, who can play game sevens, who's won a championship, who's done a lot on both ends of the floor, really, really nice pairing with Bam. I don't really think that he can play late game too many times with Bam. I mean, you think your best lineups, you want Bam at the five in space with wings, not another big. But, you know, I think for the most part in the regular season also, like, they can play together just fine and everything. Like, I just don't think that I could just see Ibaka wanting to go somewhere else with a bigger role, like the Warriors or something, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. I do love the fit for Serge. It'd be great if Miami could snag him.
I think if the Heat are going to go after a Toronto big, they would probably want to check on the status of Marc Gasol. I think he would come cheaper. I still don't know if it's been confirmed that he's not going to be in the NBA next year or not.
I feel like he's going to be in Spain. Everything that I've read and everybody that like I've kind of talked to, it feels like he's going to be in Spain.
Okay. Well, if he's going to be in Spain, then obviously all of this move. But if he isn't, then I think Gasol is the option that you want to go with there. Like, I think if you're going to pair Bam with a big, you want a guy that's going to take him away from having to guard the Embiids, the Jokic's, those guys, and let Bam kind of roam around the perimeter defensively, take some of the wear and tear off
him. Is that what the zone's for, though? Isn't that like what the zone has been so effective at doing?
It is, but also just having another big body to help on the glass. You don't have to play as much zone to give Bam that roaming element. And one of the downsides to Miami switching as much as they did, Bam is a very willing switcher, almost to a fault. Like if there's a ball screen action, he's going to hop out there. It doesn't really matter. And that kind of leaves Miami exposed on the back end. If the shot is missed, then offensive rebound opportunities are there. He could go back to their more traditional drop scheme with Bam at the four. He could play higher on those pick and rolls. And then you'd have a guy like Marc Gasol that could grab boards or, since he kind of declined a little bit, still a guy that can box
grab
out.
Grab boards, Marc Gasol.
Hey, man.
He can box out.
He can box out and make it easy for the other guys.
I hope.
And Bam already has experience with a floor-spacing big man who hesitates to shoot.
This is true.
Wait, which one? McRoberts, exactly. Or he didn't play with McRoberts. He didn't play with Josh.
No, with Myers.
Well, you know, Nikias, like, and I've seen a lot of people make that argument when I've seen people bring up like the Heat trying to go after Miles Turner in a trade or something. And I think traditionally SPO teams have done a great job of having their wings as help defenders for the back line, especially in the big 3 days. And even prior to that, when they used to use Dwayne as a weak side blocker, I think that they have enough rim defense where as long as they're cutting off the Heat were, I think, first in the league at fewest field goal attempts at the rim, or they were certainly top three. They're good at that. They're good at limiting chances at the rim. And I know that they weren't very good once teams got there. But, you know, now, you know, after that midseason acquisition and whatever they do in the offseason, they're going to have a lot of size and a lot of wings to kind of throw at the help. It's not going to be Goran or Kendrick Nunn or Derek Jones or these, you know, these smaller, weaker guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think traditionally, Eric Spoelstra teams have done a really good job of making up for size because they've never really had a lot of backline length, except for Hassan, but they played a lot of drop. And, you know, we know the whole Hassan story. I think that they have enough to make up for that, like, lack of a traditional, like, rim defender, you know, with their switch stuff, especially in the playoffs.
I think improving on the margins is what's going to help Miami get back to the finals next year, though. I think that's kind of how they need to look at it. You don't want to splurge and kind of cut off your 2021 cap space, but even if you make it,
no.
But even as you make your arguments and they're sound, that the Heat have enough length to make up for, or they have enough to compensate. At a certain point, you don't want them compensating for stuff. You want them addressing those weaknesses and making them neutral, if not strengths. So I think looking at moves to where they can add a little bit more size but still have enough mobility to be able to be flexible, that's where Toronto excels. They can play that drop. They can go to a bunch of different zones. But they keep guys out of the paint. The Heat have kept guys out of the paint. But as you mentioned, once teams get there, then it's an issue. And I think part of their reliance
on... But I think that's a size thing, too. Like, they've gotten a lot bigger since the beginning of the season.
I think they've gotten bigger on the wings, but not necessarily in the front court. And I think
that's fair. But those are the guys that are going to be helping. So now it's Jay Crowder, not, you know, Derek helping, or Iguodala, mm-hmm. right? Who's really good at splitting that difference when there's a guy rolling and there's a guy in the corner. Like, you know, they have a lot of high IQ guys.
But there's also a difference between Myers helping and then Bam shading over, then Bam helping and Jay shading over. The thing about them going small, they get a lot faster and space the floor on offense, but they have to work so much harder defensively. And they could do it in the playoffs when it's shorter games, more days in between. But surviving the regular season, I don't think you want to put those miles on Bam, especially since he's already.
I totally agree. That's the one thing I agree on. But when you look at a guy like Serge, I think you kind of go in with the understanding, and I don't think the Heat, you can't really be in the business of lying to dudes about their role and you get agents mad or whatever.
Oh, of course.
You know, that's kind of the stuff that makes it complicated.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think 100% their number one need isn't a big man, extra big man. They need one to help with the depth and a rotation big at that. But he's come playoff time, they're probably going to go back to to a similar lineup where Bam's going to be running the five to start playoff games.
I was talking to somebody on Twitter and I was like, listen, you know, but the whole thing about adding a second big or whatever and like using their biggest resource, which is MLE, on a big man. I go, when you're playing Boston and they're throwing out Tice at the five and Jalen at the four with Hayward, you know, and that small lineup that they have, Jalen and all that, Kemba, you can't play. I mean, are you really going to play two bigs in that scenario? Are you really going to let one of those guys guard Jason Tatum? And if so, then, you know, if you have somebody else on Tice, you know, then Bam's not able to be in the initial action up top, right? You kind of want him in that high pick and roll to switch or to do whatever. I mean, that's your best defender. You want him involved in that play.
Well, it depends, because Bam is a freak of nature and he can guard guards and wings.
And he can help and stuff, but it's so you can
put him at the four and let him, like, depending on the big. Because you
is that ideal, though? Is that going to be ideal for what they want to do?
It depends, because, is it better to have Ibaka or Derrick Jones Jr.? That's what I'm saying. It's like you can make that case, but it's not just the big. It's who's the big. Who's the yeah. wing. It's not just, you know, naming the position. You got to see who they can replace that with.
Yeah, the thing about the big argument is that it's really a very, very small list of bigs that would make sense for the Heat anyway. It's going to be Serge. Mm-hmm. It's going to be Mark if he doesn't go overseas. It's going to be Aaron Baines if you're assuming that three-point shooting is real, which it improved with more volume last year. So, that's kind of been an upward trend for him over the last 2 or 3 years. So, like, if it's one of those...
I mean, he still wasn't great last year. He was 35% on volume.
Yeah, but it's 35%
better than Daniel Tice.
This is true. And it's 35% on high volume, and, like, they were almost exclusively above the break, which are the tougher threes to make.
But that's what he's going to be having, I mean, in anything.
And that's also what Spo likes. He likes running the offense through his bigs in the high post and the free throw line extended on the wings and stuff. He loves putting Kelly out there with the dribble handoff. Baines is a really good passer, and he shows he can shoot that shot when they drop.
Do you like Baines, like, significantly more than Olynyk?
Yeah, defensively, yes. Hell yeah.
Significant. I mean, I like him. I think he's a better player, Kelly. But I don't like him that much more than Kelly. Maybe you like him because Spo would actually trust him to play.
I think Baines is better. He's also bigger. He's also longer. He's more willing to shoot, which is a very odd thing. And I think at this point, he would also be cheaper than what Kelly comes at. I mean, Kelly's going to accept the player option. That's like 12 mil. If the Heat operate as an over the cap team, that's going to give them the full mid level exception, which I think that's going to be Aaron Baines' market somewhere in the $8-9 million range.
I was saying that, like, I think an MLE gets it done, but is that what you really want to use an MLE on? Is that like that? That's like a plan C type move to me, especially if Olynyk opts in. I mean, I think what's nice about Baines is that if you do get him with the MLE with your plan C, you know, it kind of lets you move Olynyk and not have to worry about that backup big position, especially in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, it's a really plan. It screams plan C to me.
I mean, yeah, that's fair. It's also tough to have this conversation in general because we don't know when free agency is going to be.
what a weird fucking season.
Very weird. And like, that's, and we're just kind of neglecting the draft right now. We don't know what the Heat are going to do with that pick.
Yeah.
Like, we know they're going to use it on a player, but we don't know if that's being traded somewhere. Like, if you're telling me that the Heat are taking Tyrese Maxey at 20, then using the MLE on Aaron Baines is a lot more appealing to me because you already have, basically, you have your point guard defender. So even if you bring Goran back, you have a guy in Maxey that you can throw on point guards from day one, really. You have Kendrick Nunn. If you want to give him another year to see if he gets back to form, I think he will. But, you know, that obviously can go either way. And then you have Goran as the guy that closes games for you, running high pick and rolls with Bam. So you're kind of situated there. So from there, if your guard rotation is set, then it's, okay, how can we help Bam during the playoff? I mean, during the regular season, keep that wear and tear off of him. And if your big rotation at that point is Bam, Baines, and Olynyk, like, you basically have what you need.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. And you might not be at the game this year, but you will be on in the action with Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure that you get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you the most options to wager than anyone else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head over to BetOnline today and take advantage of the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the most important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere right now at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Only valid through September 30th. The other big I think is really interesting for them, and I like a lot more than Baines, is Paul Millsap. Now, I am a Paul Millsap truther. On Twitter, I have been a Paul Millsap truther forever. That's my guy. He's the reason I believed in those stupid fucking Hawks teams. I think he's that good that it made me believe, and I hate him for that. He's the guy that I think fits a lot better than Baines.
He's the original RSHK.
Yeah, literally. Like, do you know, Frankie, I will never forget that game against the Jazz. It was like within the first 10 games of the regular season of 2010, and they had gone to overtime. Right, it's Paul Millsap hitting a bunch of threes. Do you know, I was watching the game on NBA TV, and you know how, like, at the end of broadcast, they start showing all the logos because they had a doubleheader? So they were showing all the logos of, like, oh, thanks to our partners and blah, 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 blah. The game was over. The logos came up. Dwayne had that breakaway dunk in the open court, and it was over.
I turned that game off. I thought they won.
Fuck that game, man. I think that might be one of the regular season games I was most mad about in the history of my life.
That's definitely
Paul fucking Millsap. Oh my god!
It was so absurd because he wasn't even shooting threes at that point yet.
He wasn't even attempting them.
That was his coming out party. He waited.
Look
he
what I
that.
Found.
It's always,
dude. It was
always wild to talk about Paul Millsap now being as versatile as he is, because he came into the league like he was. What was it like the leading rebounder in NCAA history when he came into the league? Like yeah. he was very much a very much a garbage
easy hand attack.
Yeah, like he was basically a rebounder and tank guy, and now he's turned into one of the more skilled fours of the last decade and a half. It's just absurd.
He could do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, he's good.
Mm-hmm. He's really good, and I like to fit next to Bam for everything that we said about Baines, a guy that you could play next to him in the regular season to kind of take that wear and tear. Another big in that rotation, 44% from three, by the way, 50% from two, 82% free throw shooting. I mean, just total, like the standard of efficiency over here.
The thing about Millsap too that I love is that he might be able to get him for just the biannual since he's a veteran.
No way.
He's made a lot of money. He might be in that win now mode. Like,
so
I could see
his last contract was 3 years, $90 million, which I think is important.
Taxes,
if he takes the biannual, See, I didn't even consider him as a biannual guy. I thought for sure the MLE was going to be what would get that done. But, you know, he's on a good team in Denver. Who knows what they want to do? I mean, they're going to have to do something with Jeremy Grant as well. We're going to get it to him in a second. But he's a guy that, as a shooter, defender, high IQ guy, a very good defender. I mean, in the playoffs against Anthony Davis, I mean, you know, who does good against Anthony Davis? That dude did as well as anybody. Was really impressed, and as cooked as he looked at times in that Clipper series, he's awesome. He can run a little bit of their handoff stuff too, as the big in that. I mean, I think you're comfortable with that, his decision making, especially with Duncan and all these guys shooting off. You could also have him screen off ball for Duncan to get into that action when Bam's in the game. So you can, and you know, he's a guy that can roll, that can pop, that can slip. He could do all sorts of things. I love him, and I think the fit here with him is terrific. And especially if you get him for the biannual, then you don't have to feel guilty about not playing him late in games when you want to go small.
Exactly. You said that he's your plan A guy?
No, he's like a plan B guy. My plan A guy, we'll get into in a second. But he's
okay.
Like...
Oh, okay. I know your plan A guy.
He's honestly like... Because I don't think the Jeremy Grant thing is going to happen. So Jeremy Grant, by the way, would have to opt out of a $9.3 million contract, and the MLE is $9.3 million. So I don't think he would opt out of his deal, being as young as he is. He's 25, to then take a one-year MLE somewhere else when he's on a really good team right now that has a very defined role for him, and any role he takes here is going to be diminished to what he has over there.
That's fair.
Yeah, I just don't see him for literally the same amount of money moving laterally.
No state income tax.
I mean, but he's going to get more money in Denver. They're going to have bird rights, and they're going to be able to give him a 15-year deal with years. I mean, they're going to want to keep him. His last contract was 3 years, $27 million. Not made a lot of money in the league. I know that it was reported, I think it was Barry Jackson, said that the Heat are going to express interest in him. I'm like, I'm sure they are. That doesn't mean that there's anything there. I don't see how that happens.
I would kind of push back on the role thing. I don't think the role would be much different in Miami as it would be in Denver. Because again, if Denver brings everyone back, it'll be him, it'll be Millsap, it'll be MPJ kind of rotating those 3-4 minutes. And I think he would have a similar deal here. If he comes to Miami, I'm kind of offering.
He starts.
Yeah, like he starts and he can play the 4-3. And I think if you're bringing in Jeremy Grant, you kind of have to assume that Jay Crowder isn't coming back.
Oh, see, I was doing both of them.
If you're doing both, then I definitely understand the argument. I was saying if you're bringing in Jeremy Grant, then honestly, I would probably renounce Crowder and kind of add some reinforcements elsewhere, because I think Grant feels that role. I think he's a better shooter. He obviously a little bit more offensively. Like, I think you just...
But if you renounce Crowder, you know, then you're only left with $2 million in cap space. Because if you're assuming that they're going to give Goran the $20 million, you know, you can't... You resign Crowder with the bird rights, because the really alternative is, why not? Because to get to the luxury tax, it's about $50 million. So they can sign their two guys for less than 40, Goran and Jay, mm-hmm. and then add an MLE and a biannual, and you're still not in the luxury tax. So if you renounce Jay Crowder, you still have to sign Goran first because of his $20 million cap hold. You're only really left with $2 million in space, and you're not really going to get anything with that. So you might as well sign Jay with the bird rights and then just use your exceptions. That's my thing.
Okay. If you bring in Grant and keep Jay, I still think Grant is the starter in that case.
No, 100%. He's better.
1,000%. One thing, you know, like I really hope the Heat, like barring them finding something better with the trade that to include the pick, but with the pick and hopefully with one of the mid-level or the biannual, I really hope they get more athletic. You saw the difference in athleticism in against the Lakers, and the Lakers, it's really LeBron and Anthony Davis. So they're other world out of this galaxy, athleticism wise. But man, when Rondo is taking you everybody off the dribble at age 302, you know, you got to get more athletic, and Jeremy Grant and a young point guard like Maxey would be a huge boost to their athleticism, especially because they're going to most likely bring Goran back and he's going to be slow footed again.
Nikias, if they bring in Grant, would he walk in their second best open court player?
Ooh, you know what? He just might.
He's going to streak.
Like, they're not good at that. Like, this is not something that they haven't really since the big 3 years. They just haven't had a lot of juice in transition.
And, R.I.P. Gerald like, Green.
You know, Flocka.
Flocka forever.
Salute. I don't think there's a time that Joe Green has ever mentioned on this podcast where somebody doesn't go Flocka. It's just like it's every time I drive by the Marquise building downtown, I always think of him every time. I was like, Chalmers had to go over there and help him.
I always think of the Le Batard song where Mario Chalmers
saved. What is it? Almost died or saved. I don't remember the song. Classic moment. Oh my god. Yeah, so like he's a guy that I think instantly makes their open court stuff better. And in reality, the guy I want and the guy I think 100% makes them a team that is just a complete level up from where they were last year, as good as they were last year, is Gallinari. He's a guy that 100% walks in their best or their second best open court player. They just don't have a lot of those. They're just not good in transition, like in terms of athleticism and stuff like that. He's a shooter. He's an above average defender. He gets to the free throw line a lot. And him and Jimmy doing that to back lines is going to be really fun. The dude can flat out score at three levels. He can play both sides of the handoff, either as the handoff man or as the guy coming off of it. He can switch in their schemes. He'll survive defensively. And he's just, I think at times last season, you know, they were really a creator short, and having a creator from that wing position, especially if he's playing Crowder's minutes, all of a sudden, you know, your offense has another gear that I don't think is very solvable for other teams, especially with the way Miami has their off-ball movement, their screening and their stuff. And again, you know, we saw the gravity of Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero and what they're doing off ball and how much space that creates. If you had another guy who's a better shooter than Jay Crowder, who teams are going to respect a shot more than Jay Crowder, and a guy that can punish or close out unlike Jay Crowder. And I just think that's the guy that they have to go all in on. All they have is their MLE. It's not really much they can do, but he's mentioned recently that he would take less money if it meant playing for a contender. If Miami is that contender, they can instantly offer him a very, very important role on this team. He would 100% be their second option offensively, I think, pretty clearly, unless Bam's going to take a leap as a scorer that I just don't know that he'll take yet. Nikias, that's the guy that I look at, and I'm like, if they get him, they can go to war with anybody in the league.
Well, as you said, Gallo is very good. I think he solves a lot of the offensive. I don't even want to call them issues because the Heat had a really good offense last year. But he definitely helps with the half court creation. When your best two options are basically battering rams, Jimmy just kind of going to the rim and Bam trying to dunk over people as a lob guy or just trying to put guys underneath the basket, kind of unrefined in that role. Having a guy like Gallo that can create off the bounce or get to the free throw line, I think gives them a little extra something. I guess my thing with Gallo, as much as I would love to see him in Miami, I don't see the benefit of him taking, like, he would be in Miami already if he's willing to take the kind of deal that Miami wanted to give him.
But he just changed his mind. He just said, is playing for a championship more important than the contract? He said, yes. Times have changed. He wasn't the man he was yesterday, guys.
I mean, if it changes that quick, then, like, if the MLE is available to him and he has his pick,
He watched Lou Dort take over a game 7 while he watched. That'll change a man.
This is true. Like, does he take the MLE in Miami over the MLE with the Clippers?
That's the thing. I mean, is he going to go back there? They sent him away. They said, no thanks.
I mean, they sent him away to bring, well, I guess it's kind of hard to praise Paul Jordan right now, but.
I mean, come on, man. Like, you don't think Gallo looks like Paul Jordan and said, I could do that. I averaged 19 a game last season.
Like, I mean, jokes aside, like Paul George is like a top 10, top 12 player. So like, I understand that portion, but again, like.
Wherever you put him, it has to be below Jimmy.
Fair enough.
Uh, But yeah,
I think Gallo's going to have a lot of options. And I think even if Miami's going to offer him the MLE, it's going to be probably a 1-year deal.
I think most teams are going to do that, though. And he'll be able to cash in 2021 when there's more good teams with cap space.
I'm not sure.
That's the other thing.
I don't know if that's true for everyone. Like, well, Boston isn't going to have the full MLE available. But like a team like the Clippers, like I feel like they could afford to give him a 2-year or a 2+1 or something like that. If Gallo was willing to take less, but he still wants security, then I think that puts Miami at a little bit of a disadvantage.
And that's fair, but I mean, I think that this is as good a situation. I think you can argue that this is as good a situation as any. I do think that the Heat have to be aggressive and he has to be their first call whenever midnight happens. They're obviously, in a disadvantageous position where they can't offer him years or even a little more money than the MLE. But if he's a guy that wants to take a chance, I mean, the teams with cap space this season are the Knicks, the Pistons, the damn Hornets, the Suns, a bunch of losers.
How do the Hornets always have cap space?
The Hornets always have cap space and they always end up with the Zeller.
They give Batum 4 years, $5,000 billion, and fucking.
I wanted Batum so bad.
I did.
Oh my god! I've never been more wrong. I think the times I've been most wrong in free agency was how bad I wanted Batum, and when I said Al Horford is cement footed when he signed in Boston, I called him cement footed on Twitter. I said I did not want him. He wouldn't be able to defend.
You were a contract early.
Yeah, I was. I think, Nikias, you're totally right, but that doesn't change the Heat's game plan, and that should be the first call that they make. And, everybody else is a plan B to them. He absolutely changes them, and I think Twitter's going to hate me for saying this. I don't think the Heat should be favorites to come out of the East next season. I still think it's the Bucks. I do like that matchup for the Heat. I think the Celtics have a chance to get better if they want to move Gordon Hayward, especially with whatever Indiana has going over there, if they want to get Miles Turner
and Victor Oladipo.
Yeah, I mean, like, teams in the East are going to get better. I think the only team that you could argue that might not get better is Toronto. But everybody else in the East, the Nets are coming with Kevin Durant and everything. Like, the regular season is going to matter. Seeding's going to matter. And if they play road games, it's going to be different. I think the Heat are obviously a contender. And you can argue that they're a top three, top four team in the East. But I do think they need to get like legitimately better.
Yeah.
And I think Gallinari is that guy that really puts him over the top. And I think that, like, for me, for my pessimistic ass, it would make them the favorites, depending on what other teams do.
Because he's Italian.
He's from Milan. He's from my favorite city in Italy.
You see?
Yeah.
There's always a connection.
There it is. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, he's.
And we all know my lore with Milan.
He definitely brings another level to the team, especially for Jimmy. Jimmy getting able would be much more comfortable in a creator slash defender role, where he doesn't have to take that toll on his body. You saw that he can definitely get there in the finals, but you also saw the toll on his body that it took for the rest of the series that he couldn't keep that level up.
Couldn't walk after one of those games.
Yeah, but and it's not it, like what Jimmy did was insane. But you don't want Jimmy to have to do that all the time. You don't want to have to rely on Jimmy to summon that every time. So Danilo,
and you can't expect him to be able to do it again.
Exactly, he did it twice. That was insane.
He did it really three times because that game two was also amazing. Yeah, he was like a rebound short of a triple double.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Danilo would turn their top seven offense into a top three, top four offense, most likely. And
he 100% makes them a top three offense. No questions asked.
Yeah. And but I just question, I know he said that, but I until he signs for the mid-level with anybody, I don't believe it.
Like I said, I don't know either, but what's he going to do? His time with Detroit? He's going to go see what him and Blake Griffin can do? He's going to go back to the Knicks?
I mean, like,
he's going to go play with a Zeller?
I mean, he could probably make Phoenix a playoff team, honestly.
Oh, wow. Playoff team? Oh, Gallinari is now in his 30s. He's playing for the 8 seed?
Hey, I'm just saying. Like, hey.
You want to get bought by the Warriors, Clippers, or Lakers? Is that what Gallinari's playing for? He just saw Lou Dort do it.
Listen.
He just did that with Lou Dort.
You know what Gallinari is? He was born in Knicks culture. eighth seed is what he's about.
No, not eighth seed. Not making the playoff. Lottery is what he's about.
And that's your top guy.
No, he's good.
He's great.
This guy's awesome.
He's great. I'm just so sour that he didn't agree to come to Miami on the first
day. Listen, we forgive. We forget.
I don't
wasn't forget. The man he was yesterday. Another guy I have a lot of interest in, and I'm curious what Nikaya specifically thinks. Wes Matthews. He's a guy that made Miami's life a living fucking hell in that playoff series. My goodness gracious, his defense coming off screens. It was God. That guy's still good. He had that Achilles injury, seemed to bounce back at least defensively very nicely. Not a dead-eye shooter, 36% from three last year. He just finishing up a two-year, $5.2 million deal, so not a lot of money. He's 33 years old, which is, you know, not as old as you would think, but considering the Achilles injury, you know, that from a while ago when he was in Portland, that changes things. 47% from two, 77% from the free throw line. I think he's obviously not a plan A guy. I think he really helps their defense. I think he's 6'4". You can really play him on guards. He's really helpful. He can switch. He can go over screens. He can play drop. He could play in any scheme. He's not going to hurt you offensively because he'll be able to hit enough shots. I do think with all the motion Miami runs and all the space he'll have, I think the quality of his shot die is going to be pretty similar to Milwaukee. Maybe he might improve a little bit because sometimes shooters tend to improve when they move instead of just standing there waiting. Kind of gets you in a rhythm a little better. It's not their perfect answer positionally to defend other guards, but I think he's as good as an option as there is in this free agent class. And he's a guy that you trust late in games and in the playoffs. And he's just another guy to add to your depth rotation. I really like him. If they can get him for the biannual, I think that's an absolute steal. I don't see why he wouldn't stay with the Bucks or go somewhere else. But, you have to think that Miami makes that call.
I think in terms of the wings, like, he has to be called number one. As you mentioned, a tremendous perimeter defender. He's a solid spot-up shooter. If he was to come to Miami, I can guarantee you he's going to get one post-up call a game. It's going to be one of the side out-of-bounds plays. He's going to give him a post-up. Sneaky good post-up guy against smaller guards.
Marquette guy. You know how they love Marquette guys?
There you go. There's
he played for Jamie.
He did. They're boys.
So, I mean, there's the connections there. Like, I would love Wes Matthews in Miami. But, I mean, it's a pretty snug fit. With his skill set, he fits literally anywhere. So I think you do have to worry about the bidding war there, because if it does only take that biannual exception or something similar, then if it's Miami versus the Lakers, then that gets kind of tough. But yeah. I think just in a vacuum, like, if the Heat can snag Wes Matthews, that makes them better on both ends, and it also makes Milwaukee a little bit worse. And considering they just beat Milwaukee, like, that's obviously a huge deal entering 2021. You know, if you weaken Milwaukee, they lose in the second round or something, makes it a little easier to get that other guy. So I think, yeah, Wes Matthews would be a great fit.
The other thing that I don't think we've talked about is this team fell short of a championship. They didn't win a championship. And I do think that there's something to be said about guys coming to be the final piece to a team. And I know, like, how much these guys are competitionaholics and everything. You know, like, if the Warriors had won, Durant probably doesn't go there. And I know that that's like an extreme example of it. And I know that a lot of times teams go back to defending champions. I mean, we saw it when we were at the Heat. Ray Allen came here. Shane Battier. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen that happen. But, you know, I think that there's something to be said if you're a team that was almost there, but you were just quite missing a little bit, and a guy saying, "I can be that final piece. I can be the one to lift this into a championship." And I think that might matter a little bit in this scenario. Maybe I don't know what the reputation of this Heat team is amongst players, but you have to think that it's pretty positive considering the way that they play and how they do it. So I just, you know, they're a contender, and I think that they're going to be in the conversations for all these guys. And I do think that they're going to have that little thing in their back pocket that's going to help them. And it doesn't hurt if Pat Riley's making that phone call. It's going to be really helpful for them. Another guy I want to look at before we kind of wrap things up, Jordan Clarkson. He was good last season. It's probably one of his best seasons, 15 a game, 37% three-point shooter, 53% from two, 84% from the line, wrapping up a four-year, $50 million contract. He's 28 years old, still in his prime. I don't really know what his price point would be, Nikias. Maybe you can probably answer that. I think an MLE is a bit too high. But if he still doesn't have a home and the free agency market has dried up, there are worse things to do.
I think, well, first and foremost, I think if the Heat are going after Jordan Clarkson, that means something's gone wrong with the Goran Dragic negotiations.
Yes, yes. Oh, no, see, I disagree.
Oh, go ahead. Why you?
You know, if they just really strike out on all those other guys, I think Clarkson is fine.
Yeah, like I think just because of the type of guard that Clarkson is and the guard room that the Heat already have, I don't think you're bringing in Clarkson unless he's coming in to replace someone. So I think that's, at least that's how I view it. I don't think the Heat go after Jordan Clarkson unless they fall out with Goran, or if they have something on the medicals on Goran that they don't feel comfortable with, or they say, hey, Goran, take 1 year, 12 mil instead of 20. And Goran's like,
or they want to move none.
Well, yeah, but I think with Clarkson being 28, like I think he's set up to get one more deal. You said his last contract was what, like 4 years, 50 mil? I think what he's coming off the career year, the big thing with him is that he's finally substituted some of those long pull-up twos and turned those into threes. And that, with the three-point shot improving, that has made him a more efficient player. He's that kind of a spark guy that can kind of play either guard spot. So it wouldn't surprise me if he does go to one of those teams with cap space and then he just gets traded at a certain point. So I honestly wouldn't be surprised if he goes to like Detroit or something and gets big money. If he's taking the MLE.
Ouch.
Yeah, like if he's taking the MLE, then I think he's a solid option for Miami. But again, that's a Goran's gone option more so than someone they're just going to target outright.
I don't really think he ends up here, and I don't really think he's going to take a discount to play off the bench on a one-year deal for everything that you just said. But I do feel like he's a name that you should mention.
Mm-hmm.
He was really good.
kind of saved
a couple other names.
I was just gonna say, kind of saved Utah in a couple of playoff games last year. So
he's good.
He's got New York really Nick written all over him. Come on.
Oh, you're so right. That is. He also has Detroit Piston written all over him too. I mean, no, that's listen, that's Detroit Piston all over him.
The Knicks don't have a point guard. A
couple other names. Nerlens Noel. I love that guy. I don't really see how that happens, but I've always been a fan of his, especially defensively. I think he probably hurts their offense a little bit, but I really like him.
Nerlens is fun. Very fun 2K big.
very fun fantasy big, too. He averaged, like, at some point, he was like two steals and two blocks a game. That's fantasy gold, baby.
Yeah, that's always kind of been the thing with him. Crazy tools, even after the injuries. Can swat shots, can steal the ball, can really switch out. Has that kind of mobility. He is just everywhere at the same time, which is kind of a detriment defensively. He tries to snag everything. Got a little better in OKC. A little bit more disciplined on both ends. But
think of the culture, though.
Well, culture is certainly a word you can attribute to Nerlens Noel. I agree. But yeah, he's a fun option. I don't think Miami's going to target him, much less sign him. But I think he's definitely going to help someone's bench.
I like him a lot. He's like a very, you know, down the list if they strike out at a bunch of dudes. Mo Harkless is another guy. I know you mentioned him in your piece on basketballnews.com. Was a member of the Heat for like 5 minutes. You could catch me on Twitter complaining that they kept Myers Leonard over Mo Harkless. I think he's a guy that would fit here pretty well, you know, if it comes to it. Justin Holiday is another guy. I do want to mention Christian Wood. I see a lot of people link like wanting him. There's just no way a guy that young is going to come to Miami on a one-year deal. Dude is 24 years old, had a career season, is set to start somewhere and actually like begin his NBA career. The guy's not going to play and back up Bam and playoff game. Like, I don't know. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, Christian Wood's going to a cap space team. Like,
he's too good. Atlanta would be nice for him. See, like, if Atlanta didn't have a big, he'd be great over there.
He could still fit.
Like, he has enough.
Yeah, him and Collins both can shoot enough that they can make it work.
Like, for real, if, let's say Toronto loses Ibaka, that's a guy I would call if I'm Toronto.
Are they going to have the funds for him? Like, I don't think he's taking the mid-level exception. That's kind of my...
No, but I mean, if Ibaka leaves and all of a sudden they have cap space,
they actually have cap space, and I think that'd be a fun option for them.
I like, don't quote me on the cap sheet. I don't know Fred's cap holds and everything. Fred's cap hold can't be that big. Isn't he coming off a rookie deal or something? Yeah, I don't know. Not really familiar with Toronto cap space, but I mean, I'm sure that they can get it done without compromising Giannis.
Yeah, it's too late now, buddy. We know you know the cap sheet. It's okay.
I don't know the cap sheet. I just leave me alone. Very convincing. You guys should see me in DMs like defending keeping the Toronto core together. I had to look at myself in the mirror today.
Oh God.
I was like, what's going on with me?
No.
Now to close, I want to talk a little bit about the Heat's guys that we haven't talked about yet. We all think Derek walks, right? We all think that there's no chance that Derek ends up here again.
Yeah, he's gone.
He's an Atlanta Hawk.
He has been
that
late.
Guy has Atlanta Hawk written all over him.
He does.
He'd be good fun fit. With Trae Young. I'm not going to lie.
Good fit.
That'd be great for him. I really like him. I can think of a young team on the up that wants an athletic guy would
and
be good for him.
And they play fast-paced. That's the kind of style he needs to go to.
Yeah, he just can't wait in a corner as Jimmy pounds the ball up top. It's just not really good for him.
Trae Young's what, the best lob passer in the league right now? So, I mean,
that'd be fun.
That would be fun. I'd love it for him. But yeah,
I like Derek, man. He's a good guy in the locker room. He's a really nice to the media. He's cool. I like Derek. I want the best for him. Solomon Hill, Heat life for Solomon Hill. I hope they resign him, man. I mean, just for the sake of the show, I need him to stay here. He's our in. Like, we can't lose our only in.
Yeah, like he's probably coming back on the minimum, I would assume.
You think? Oh man, the guy. I hope so.
He's an option.
You think You think we can organize like a Chris Haynes situation where like we report for Solomon Hill, like how Chris Haynes does for Damian Lillard?
Hey.
You think we can work this out?
That's the end.
I mean, that's what's more our show than that, than Solomon Hill being our guy. He's the best. I love that dude.
There you go. Word the angle.
I thought he legitimately like gave them good minutes in the finals.
He did. Like, he was fine defensively. Like, he had one pass that I did not know that he could throw.
That pocket pass?
Like, okay.
How about that three-pointer?
Shit will live forever.
Oh, my God.
2 for 2 from three. Did not miss a three in the finals. Sharpshooter.
Sniper.
Ah, but, like, legit, like, if he's, like, one of the last guys off your bench that you could trust to put in a big moment if fucking shit goes awry, I mean, that's a great option for you. And he's a good locker room guy. That guy's really smart. If you've listened to this podcast, you've heard him.
Yeah,
that guy's smart.
Anime. That's why he's smart.
Well, I gotta watch the anime. He's a really smart guy. He's a leader. I love him, so I really hope they bring him back. The most interesting guy that we haven't mentioned yet, and I saved him for last, our very complicated relationship with Myers Leonard. I think if they don't get... let's say they get Gallo and, I don't know, somebody else that's not a big with the biannual. I think bringing Gallo back, bringing Myers back... is helpful if they can fit him in under the luxury tax. I think playing next to Bam for the grind of the regular season is good. I think even against Philly, I thought he was really good in that zone if it comes to it. He's a guy that I think they have to look to see how the free agency period plays out, but you know, they could do worse than him. I think that he's a guy that just fits in well with the organization, with the culture. You know, I have... you know, questions about his defense and offense and stuff like that. But I think it's a pretty easy fit back if they strike out on other guys and if they can pay him.
Yeah, like I think he's, if you're looking at the 3-and-D type bigs, you know, your Baines, your Gasols, if he's there, guys like that, your Serge Ibaka's, like I think Myers is the worst of that group. However, like we had a pretty substantial sample size of him, his inclusion in the starting lineup and Miami starting lineup being among the best in the NBA. Like he clearly knows the system, all of the systems at this point. the front office, the coaching staff all love what he brings off the floor, just what he brings to the locker room, what he brings is kind of that communicator. Like there's a very clear role for him there. Him and Ellie clearly love Miami. So I think that's going to be one of the earlier conversations that the Heat have as they enter free agency, whenever the heck it starts. And we're like, hey, we're going to look here, but we would love to have you back. Just kind of hang tight unless you get something that you can't turn down. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's back.
So in almost 800 minutes of Bam and Myers together, they're plus +7 net rating with a 114 offensive rating. That's really good. That's better than Bam by himself. Obviously, the sample size is 1,000 minutes more with Bam at center and Myers off. They're plus +4 with a similar offensive rating. Their defense actually gets a little worse, which is surprising. But again, smaller sample size by almost 1,000 minutes. But I mean, 800 minutes is not an insignificant sample size.
No. They're
good together.
Starters, too. A lot of those are good starters against the best lineups. Nikita said, quarterback of defense. When he wasn't playing, he's a great locker room guy. He's yelling. He's active. He's engaged.
He's yelling. That's like his. That's on the resume. He's yelling.
No, but that's a thing, man. He's engaged. You saw Deion Waiters, NBA champion.
He rode shit out of that bike. He rode the shit out of that stationary bike. That dude was leading the league in stationary bike in the playoffs.
But that makes a difference, man. The guys on your bench being engaged and together and ready when their number is called and ready when their number isn't called. That's important. That's not fucking up the locker room.
I mean, truly the anti-Hassan Whiteside of bigs.
Literally every way.
Like, it's just like the total fucking opposite of Hassan. It's funny because I threw this question out to our Discord server. And by the way, join our Discord server. It's on our Twitter page. It's on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/MIEBeat. There's a comfy link right there. We're going to put the Discord server in the description of this podcast. You can join. We're having lots of fun. I asked the Discord server what free agent they would like me to talk about. They for some reason mentioned Hassan Whiteside. Oh, so just like literally in no way does he fit in anything that they do. He's a big that can't shoot or screen well.
Give me Michael Beasley over him.
Oh, I would love Beasley. Let's go. You saw Michael Beasley in that that Miami League thing that he was playing shirtless against John Wall?
Coking him.
Let me tell you, Beasley has had the same damn moves since 2008. He holds the ball really low to his feet, then fakes left and dribbles right. That's it. That's the move.
He pulls up. That's all he needs.
That's all he has. It's worked. It's Collins. That's all he's done.
Where do you think James Harden got it from?